Did you literally have to set up a new email address to do this?
Oh, one? Man. And for some reason, I don't know how to...
Rink and lead imps. Where Jack goes down. Burpage. So, you've... I don't know what to say now.
Yes.
So, the pig pocket... The pig pocket... Say that. The pig...
And the stadium erupts in red, white and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Manchester, brace yourself.
Rangers are coming!
Hi everyone and welcome to the next episode of the iReady podcast. As ever, I'm your host Derek and with me is my co-host Dave. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm well, Derek. How are you, mate?
Not very good. I started my first day back at work after 2 weeks off there.
It's never, ever a good day to be going back to work after holidays. You know me, I rarely get to go on holidays, so I'm not really in that position a lot, going back to work and things like that after holidays. No, Derek, I'll be honest with you, 100%. Those days are the worst days in the world for me, as the first day back. As soon as you drive in to the workplace and you're like, oh my god, this is just a nightmare. So I do have sympathy for you, mate. A bit of a nightmare. It'll not be as bad tomorrow.
No, hopefully not. But anyway, we've got three games to cover today. We've obviously got the win against Dundee United, Lincoln Red Imps, and the unfortunate draw against Hibs to wrap it up there. So I suppose we better go down the tunnel and onto the pitch. So the first game we've got to cover was Saturday the 12th of September. It was a 4-0 win at home to Dundee United in the Premiership. One change from the Hamilton game initially, with Balogun coming in for Hillander. However, Balogun tweaked something during the warm-up, so Hillander took his place, typically.
Yeah, exactly. That's like the worst luck ever. You know, a guy that we, you know, were really impressed with when he first came in. And we're like, oh, this guy's fantastic, you know, a great find. And he comes and plays a couple of games and then gets injured and he's out for ages. On the plus side, Hillander stepped into his shoes and has been excellent up until that game that you mentioned there. No. But no, he's been excellent, you know, in defence. But, you know, that's just, you know, really bad luck for the guy. You know, you'd have been desperate to get back in, you know, to the team and start getting, you know, playing again. I'm not quite sure what the injury was, Derek, but, you know, that's him. He's, you know, been out for a few games now after that. So here's hoping it's not too serious.
No, but you know what it's like with Rangers, though, and serious injuries. We seem to just get them from nowhere.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, the injuries weren't to stop as well in this game. But
yeah,
the first half itself, very comfortable, a very competent first half, totally in control. Dundee United only threatened with one on one occasion. We were moving up the ball about well, trying different options. However, we're not working the keeper often enough. Don't know how many times I need to say that.
Yeah.
In the ninth minute, though, the second injury of the game happens, where Jack goes down. Nobody about him at all. He didn't look in too much distress, and he did come off, and Kamara came on. He walked off as well, if I can remember right, and he's not been back since either, I don't think, has he?
No, he's definitely not. And again, I'm not quite sure the extent of his injury either. I know they sort of play these things low-key, Derek, so again, we just have to hope that it's nothing that's going to keep him out for too long.
No. So Kamara came on for him, and on the 12th minute, we got our first goal with Ryan Kent scoring. We played the ball down the left. The ball went to Kent. He cuts inside. A lovely 1-2 with Hadji, who played the ball through the defender's legs to Kent in the box. Kent cuts inside with the ball. He shimmies to create some space and shoots into the back of net. Just a lovely all-round move there. Great 1-2 with Hadji, and some great skill from Kent as well to make the space for the shot.
Yeah, excellent goal. He took it fantastically as well, Derek. And as you say, he goes in, takes on his man, full of confidence, gets past him, no bother, and a brilliant, ferocious, low shot past the goalkeeper and into the net. So great to get an early goal and, you know, build on from that.
Yep. A minute later, it was a good move down the left. The cross came in and Kamara with a header just left of the post mid-tight. 18th minute, we had a lot of possession ending in Hadji having a curling shot just wide of the right post. And then the third injury of the game, on the 19th minute, Barker hobbles off with a hamstring injury, and I think he had to be helped off as well. And Morelos came on the 22nd minute for him. So it was a good, I think the play raged on, and it just taken a good few minutes for the stoppage to happen in the game as well. But just another kind of muscular type injury as well.
And another player, Derek, that was, I mean, I know that there's a lot of supporters have got their reservations about Barker, but we were the first to admit, Derek, that, you know, he was the more game time he was getting, the more effective that he was becoming. And again, really unfortunate for the guy, you know, because he was, you know, starting to really cement his place in the first team. And, you know, the manager certainly had a high opinion of him as well. So another unfortunate one.
Yep. 25th minute, a lovely move ending Kamara to Kent on the right side of the box. Plays the ball into the middle on the ground to Morelos, who may have tried a shot, which was, I don't know if it was a shot or a cross, but he tried something anyway. It was right into the path of Roof, who tried a back heel flick, however, saved by the keeper. It was ruled offside in any case, but it was still a great move and a great wee bit of skill from Roof there.
Yep.
27th minute, shot by Dundee United, but it was a trundler that went well wide. 31st minute, was a free kick from Dundee United on the right side of our box, floated in towards the back post, headed towards the front of the post. Roof got his head to clear, but was offside given in any case. On the 36th minute, was a long floaty corner in from the right to the back post. Hellander gets his head to it, but it was just over the bar. And then we went 2-0 up on the 38th minute, with Tavernier scoring. Barisic on the left, puts a cross in, deflects off the hand of the defender, but goes right to the back post, and Tav, who was under pressure, bundles it over the line. So great awareness there, great putting a cross in as well. And this is the thing that will become a feature of the Hibs game: just try something, get the ball in, take a shot, do something, might deflect off the hand, or could have been a penalty as well, that one, but it might fall to us as well. It's better to have the chance than not.
Yeah, take a gamble, Derek, basically. That's what we're saying, especially in the box. Yes, quite rightly you've said there, anything can happen. If the goalkeeper can't get his hands to it, it could fall anywhere. I think we have, over the years, you know, with the likes of Ali McCoist and Chris Boyd and people like that, they would always sort of take a gamble in the six-yard box, and, you know, the vast majority of time it would pay off. Something that we've been missing a lot, I think, is that sort of poacher in there. And thankfully for us, it was Tav, who we've always said is a fantastic player and things like that, you know what I mean? But he was, you know, it was good for him to get in. I think it's done his confidence the world of good, Tav, getting the goal as well, because I think he's been, you know, he's been a really good player since then. So, or certainly in the next two matches, you know, this one, the next one. So, you know, absolutely delighted. 2-0 up. And I think we were, you know, hoping that we were going to go on and score a lot more.
Yeah. On the 41st minute, one of the first inexplicable refereeing decisions, Clancy gives a foul for Dundee United against, it was against Barisic, despite Barisic being held, and he fell over. I don't understand what happened there with the referee. And then Dundee United's only chance of the half on the 42nd minute, they had a corner in for them right. McLaughlin came out for it, but missed it. Clark gets a glancing header to it, but it just goes wide. Very dangerous, as if he had connected properly, it was in the back of the net.
Yep.
The first piece of concerning play from McLaughlin, I would have said as well.
Yeah, I would say so, yep.
So only half time, got to be happy with that in terms of, you know, being 2-0 up. We haven't really, we only conceded that one chance at the end there, and the only disappointing thing is not putting their keeper under pressure. But as I said, we seem to say that time and time again.
Yeah, and I think at that point, you know, we're 2-0 up and we're really, again, just like what I said there, hoping that we would really put them to the sword and get another few goals, you know, in the second half. That was what I was hoping, because we've seen it far too often, you know, that we're basically trying to walk the ball into the net and it not coming off for us. But as you're about to get into, Derek, thankfully, you know, all of our pressure paid off.
Yeah, certainly in the second half we stepped up and we just went for, I wouldn't say the jugular at that point, but we certainly played a lot better. We're trying a lot more things, we're shooting a lot more, which was good to see. 47th minute was a good move, ending in Tavernier playing a great dinked ball to the left to Kent, who plays the ball into the box to Roof, who was in space. He hits a shot, but a good save from the keeper. He got a second bite at it, tried to dink it to Morelos, but it was cleared by the defence. 48th minute, Barisic with a charging run down the left into the box, overhits it but manages to retain the ball and put a dinked cross into the box. The keeper initially saved it at the near post, however he spills it. Ball comes to Hadji, who tried a shot but went well wide. 53rd minute, lovely move with Roof on the edge of the box, plays a lovely through ball to the on-running Morelos, who very unselfishly cuts it back to Kent at the back post, but he just couldn't quite get there. Very interesting from Morelos there, because generally you just see when he gets the goal in his sight, he just goes for it, certainly in the box anyway. You don't see Morelos passing a lot in the box. He's just thinking of the goals instantly. Yes. That was maybe one of these occasions where, yes, he was completely unselfish, but he might have been better taking it on himself.
Yeah, as you say, really unusual for him. I mean, as soon as it happened, I thought he's going to hear a pop here. Was he being unselfish? I don't know. Was it the fact, you know, is his confidence maybe a bit low, Derek, at that point? So he's maybe not going to go for it. Whereas, you know, when he was, you know, at full pelt for his last season, I think he would have definitely went for it. I'm not quite sure about that one, but I just, strange, you know, especially for him to do that.
Unfortunately, though, that was the last passage of play Morelos would be involved in, because a minute later, on the 54th minute, an absolute shocker on him. He was left with a visible gash on his thigh. It was a follow-through with the studs, and he had to be stretchered off. It wasn't even a red card, which was clearly a red card every day of the week. It wasn't even a yellow card. It wasn't even a free kick. I just... the most inexplicable decision. Last season or two seasons ago, there was a foul that Ryan Jack done on May of Aberdeen, where his leg had nowhere to go. He did catch him on his ankle with his studs, and that was deemed a straight red card. And as we said, he had nowhere else to place his foot. This was similar, but he actually moved his foot upwards to try and get Morelos.
It's got to be, Derek, if you think about it, for the height that it was, that's not a natural position to, you know, for, you know, where the, you know, the gash was in his knee. That's not a natural position. If your foot was, you know, a couple of inches off the ground and you were falling on it, fair enough. But for your foot to the studs to be that high, how on earth anybody could say that that was a natural position for his foot to be? I've got no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Now, nothing happens, obviously. Morelos, he was down for ages. He had to be stretchered off. Yep. Barisic came off as well at the same time because he was getting hit up with the referee. Yep. Now, he had already been given a yellow card, as I mentioned.
And you just knew, and it'd be fair to the management, Derek, the way the game was going with the referee, they knew the slightest wee thing, he would have taken great delight in sending off Barisic at that point. We all know that. So, to be fair to the management team, they spotted that. They shouldn't have had to have done it. But going by the way the game was with that particular referee, they knew that he was going to have, you know, in any chance he could, he was going to send him off. So they had to do it at that stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin Clancy for you. Arfield and Bassey came on. Now, just want to pause the game here a minute, because quite clearly you were thinking, well, surely that there would be action taken by the compliance officer, Claire White. She had apparently, now I'm taking this text exactly from one of the tabloids, compliance officer Claire White had until 3 p.m. on the 15th of September to raise a notice of complaint about the incident. If the team of officials at Ibrox on Saturday say they hadn't seen the entire incident clearly, or it was deemed that Morelos's safety had been endangered by excessive force, the deadline passed and no notice of complaint was lodged. Apart from the fact that the English was absolutely woeful in that piece there, it now begs the question, is the compliance officer role changed now? Because I was under the impression that anyone could refer an incident to the compliance officer, who would look at it and then refer it to a panel of three ex-referees to see if it merited retrospective action. But the way that read there is she had to contact the referees who were involved in the game and see if they agree that they missed it or that it endangered the safety of Morelos. And then Claire White would then refer it to another panel who would then make an adjudication on it. So for me, that whole system seems to have changed. So because we all know the story about McGregor emailing the compliance officer constantly about incidents in a particular game because he was pissed off. So
yeah.
I don't know what that is all about there. So ultimately, what it leads to then is these referees can't agree that they seen something or they missed something or they believe it never endangered the safety of Morelos. The guy had to go off with a good couple-inch gash on his leg.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We only ask for fairness. There's no fairness in that system.
I, Derek, as you know, have been conversing with someone I know who's a Dundee United supporter, and I've told you all about some of the ridiculous things that he was sending me, basically having a pop at Rangers and the supporters and all of that. And he actually posted another thing after that with regards to that incident. And it doesn't help when you've got former referees out there who are coming in and saying, no, I don't think it was a red card and stuff like that. But what got me about that, and it was in the newspapers, I can't even tell you who the former referee was, you know, he didn't believe it was a red card either. Fair enough, Derek, but for it not to be a yellow or not even to be a free kick is absolutely incredible. And as you just said there, surely that is endangering the player. The height of where his studs were, on his knee, if that's not endangering a player, then I don't know what is. I'm completely flabbergasted by it.
I mean, this is what's now transpired. Now, Rangers, as we know, they like to do things behind closed doors, but there comes a point now where Rangers have to publicly come out and say something about this. Now, I know that Gerard, after the game, did say that he'd be interested to see what if the shoe was on the other foot and it was Morelos that gave out. But the club now have it's been a complete dereliction of their duty for their own the safety of their own players for the fact that they haven't came out and had a go at Clancy, because this is not the first time he's done something like this and allowed, you know, an absolute shocker with an absolute shocker on one of our players. Rangers need to take the stand on this, and this was the perfect game to do so, because we won the game emphatically, so which we'll obviously get onto in a minute. Now that if we fast forward to the Hibs game that was just there, where there was a clear offside that they scored from and it wasn't given as offside, it's just sour grapes if we mention anything about that.
Yeah,
so
exactly,
Rangers have dug their own hole in this sort of respect, and they're not the fan. I know there's a way of going about things and you want to do it dignified and you want to do it sensibly, you don't want to fly off the handle, etc., etc., but at the same time, they've got to be seen to doing something, and they're basically getting our fans' backs up by not seen to be doing something in the public. It's not good enough as far as I'm concerned.
No, as you say, what Steven Gerrard said was exactly what we were all thinking. If Alfredo Morelos had done that to another player, there would have been shouts from all of the media and every other fan in this country for Morelos to get retrospectively banned, and you name it, everything under the sun, the book to have been thrown at him, you name it. And I don't think that for a second that there wouldn't have been any punishment during the game if it had been Morelos. Morelos had done that to somebody else, a referee would have sent him off 100%, Derek. I don't care what anybody says. And as you say, I'm quite surprised that the club haven't come and said anything. I know that Gerard said that, but like you, I would have liked, you know, some sort of statement to that fact, because it was shocking. And again, going back to what I said before, for former referees to come out and say, you know, I don't think it was a red card because he went for the ball and stuff like that. Fair enough to say that. I think it was a red card, but for it, you know, but then for it to be left like that, you know, it should have been at least a yellow card or a free kick, at least.
Yeah.
But nothing happened whatsoever, and I think that's what made it even more unbelievable. It was just incredible again, Derek. It really was.
And for Morelos being this supposedly dirty player, he's never, ever injured a player. I don't, to my knowledge, he's never made a player go off injured with any of his tackles.
No.
You know, but Anyway, we could get lost in referees all night, and we've still got another incident to talk about. But anyway, in the 61st minute, Hadji with a shot into the box. It was saved by the keeper. Comes right out to the left to Bassey, who has a shot, but again saved by the keeper. We could pick up the ball again, ending the cross in from the right, and Bassey headers the ball just wide. Unlucky sequence of events, that one there. 64th minute, Arfield with a shot that just wide of the post. And then we got the elusive third goal on the 68th minute with Roof scoring. I missed it. I think at this point I went down to turn the cooker on, which I've already been slagged about online. Tavernier, I've seen it back in replay. Tavernier down the right, passes to Kent, who leaves it off for Arfield, who drives the ball forward, going to the left side, cuts it back to Roof, who taps into the back of net. Simple as you like, good goal.
Yeah, it was great awareness by Roof to see what was going on. Managed to outstretch it, you know, to direct the ball into the net. So, no, great all-round goal, team play, excellent. And as you say, to get the third goal, I think that really, you know, put Dundee United's head right down and got us, you know, our confidence up big time to go on and try and get the fourth.
Yep, in the 80th minute, Roof to Arfield on the right side. Arfield gets the ball to the edge of the box on the right, has a shot, keeper makes a good save and puts the ball out for the corner. 85th minute, United with a shot on the edge of the box, comes off the bar, comes back out, and the follow-up was ballooned over the bar. Very, very unlucky that from Dundee United, and probably more importantly, very lucky from us there, because it was almost a certain goal.
Yeah.
86th minute, we got our fourth goal and finally wrapped up the game. And it was Arfield that scored. Kent, with his back to goal on the halfway line, looks up and dinks a lovely ball down the right to the on-running Hadji. Got to the edge of the box, puts in a lovely weighted ball to Arfield, who shoots it into the back of net. Just all round that move, quick, incisive, cut an edge. It was brilliant all round.
Yeah, great goal. Fantastic.
And on the 93rd minute, Kent with a shot well over the bar, and that wrapped up the game. So, ultimately, a great 3 points. It was great to, obviously, I'm not going to say old foes, but it was great to put Dundee United back in their place as well after them, you know, bleating on for so long as well. And especially after they got that win in the Cup a few years ago as well, as we were making our way back up the leagues. This is just the first bit of retribution for all the shite they gave us, wasn't it?
It was great, Derek, and it was great to show them, you know, as poor as they are as well, because we really did completely outplay them from start to finish. And, you know, the four goals, you know, I think we should have had more against them, to be honest with you. And I think if it had been about six or seven, it wouldn't have, you know, looked out of place, because we really did completely outplay them from start to finish and create a lot of chances against them. So, but just delighted, Derek, that we weren't, it wasn't another one of these games where we're just, you know, constantly having all the ball and not putting the keeper under a lot of pressure. So delighted with the result and delighted with the performance, and delighted to get it right up that Dundee United supporter that I was having the words with that I told you about as well. So,
as well as getting the 3 points and the four goals, it was a record-breaking result as well, because it was the seventh game in the row at the start of the season we hadn't conceded a goal in, and broke a 114-year record, wasn't it?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, really, really pleased with that one as well, Derek. And, you know, give all the praise out to the defence and the goalkeeper as well, because, you know, you said that a while ago, Derek, about McLaughlin. You know, we weren't sure that he was going to come in and really put McGregor under a lot of pressure, but he's seized his chance and goals, and he's been excellent for us, Derek, and, you know, and quite rightly in goals. I mean, we all know McGregor's an absolute class act goalkeeper. But, you know, McLaughlin has made it impossible for the manager to drop him. So, you know, really, really good, and delighted that that's, you know, another record that we've got. And I can't see that one getting broken for a long time. So, absolutely delighted.
Yep, absolutely. So it leads us into the next game, which was Thursday the 17th of September. It was away to Lincoln Red Imps, where we won 5-0 in the Europa League second round qualifiers. So obviously it was not a home and away game. It was just a one-shot game.
Yeah.
Leads its own problems, because, you know, we've used the home and away ties to our advantage a lot of the time in Europe, even going back to Walter Smith days. So it was could have been a bit tetchy. We kind of felt, though, that we had more than enough quality to take them on. Obviously wary of the fact that they did beat Celtic a few years ago as well. Different circumstances, obviously, though. But we made six changes in this game. We lined up McGregor, Tavernier, Edmondson, Goldson, Hadji, Itten, Kamara, Stewart, Roof, Barisic and Arfield. On the subs bench, we had McLaughlin, Hellander, Defoe, Davis, Kent, Patterson and Morelos, who gladly made the bench, at least after that, picking up that injury.
Yeah.
So, really, the game itself in the first half, apart from the two goals, not a great deal to talk about.
No,
We were in complete control. The two goals came from set pieces, and McGregor had nothing to do. I don't think he had even any kickouts, to be honest. Pretty much all the possession. We were trying to get in behind the defence, but we were a bit pedestrian at times. We didn't really test our keeper again. Roof going off with a suspected calf injury, which was a big concern as well. And it was hopefully only a precaution, which we'll get into as well. On the 18th minute, though, it was a good move from a free kick with Arfield playing a through ball on the right side of the box. Stewart got the ball, puts in a cross into the box, and it just snuffed out for the corner before Roof got the ball. We did go a goal up, though, on the 20th minute with Tavernier scoring and making it 1-0. Tavernier pulled rank over Hadji to take a free kick from about 25 yards on the left-hand side, up and over the wall, into the postage stamp. And as I said in the post-match reaction, vintage free kick from Tavernier, because it's vintage in terms of we know that's what he's capable of,
yeah.
And also vintage, because it's a bit of a rarity for him to do that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, a few seasons ago, Derek, it was happening, you know, quite a few times during the season, but we've not seen it often enough. But great free kick, got it over the wall, right into the top corner, as you say. You know, technique was excellent, and, you know, at that point, you know, excellent timing for the second goal to really take any pressure off us whatsoever. So absolutely brilliant, you know, to get the goal at that stage.
Yeah. On the 41st minute, that's when Roof went off injured and Nathan Patterson came on for him. A bit of a strange one, that substitution, we thought initially, because obviously you're taking off a striker, putting on a right back. So certainly it looked as if initially that Tavernier was going to push up to the right wing and then Patterson was going to drop back into the right back, which happened until, you know, obviously the second half kicked off. But anyway, we did get our second goal on the 48th minute with Goldson scoring. It was a free kick right at the touchline on the edge of the box on the left-hand side. Was floated in by Barisic to the back post. May have taken a slight nick off the head of the defender, but went right to Goldson at the back post, who nods at home very coolly. Really, really well taken goal.
Yeah, it certainly was. Straightforward stuff as well, Derek. I think we've seen it. I was watching him the whole way and could see it happening, and, you know, very well executed. You know, great goal, straightforward for him, but as I say, great goal, you know, for the defender to get in there. So, again, delighted for him, and do his confidence a world of good as well.
Yep, absolutely. So into the second half, Tavernier came off at half-time and Morelos came on. So ultimately, it ended up just more or less a straight swap when you looked at it. Patterson's kept in that wing-back role and Morelos pushed up into Roof's position. 46th minute, Patterson with a cross in from the right, Itten with a decent header in the box, but a comfortable save from the keeper. 55th minute, Hadji with a free kick from 35 yards, up and over the wall. Keeper moved for it and it was a comfortable save, but he spills it. Our attacker running in, but the keeper managed to regain the possession. 58th minute, ball into the box on the right. Stewart allows it to bounce twice whilst being under pressure from the defender. Gets a good shot off and forces the keeper into a good save to put it out for a corner. 60th minute, Barisic down the left. Great cross into the box, bounces and Itten gets his head to it. Keeper makes a good save, but Itten had drifted offside in any case. 62nd minute, free kick whipped in from the right from Lincoln Red Imps. Edmondson ducks, ball bounces to the back post, ball falls to the Red Imps player, and after bouncing off the back of Goldson, the Red Imps player shoots and McGregor pulls off a great save at close range and eventually cleared. So, a bit strange from Edmondson, don't know why he had to duck with that one there, but... But with McGregor not having literally anything to do all game, comes out of the cold to make his first one of the first starts of the season, and makes an absolute amazing save. You know, that's pays to have you know, two great keepers, doesn't it?
Exactly, and it shows that's the mark of a great goalkeeper, though, Derek. You know, that awareness, you know, to be able to do, you know, because we used to see it years ago for like Andy Gorham, Stefan Kloss, you know, the mark of a great goalkeeper, somebody that's not really got a lot to do in a game, and then, you know, out of the blue could pull off an absolute world-class save. It just shows you, you know, that's what it takes to be an elite goalkeeper, and Alan McGregor certainly is.
Yep, absolutely. 62nd minute, Itten came off and Defoe came on. I think this is his first start back after being out injured this season.
Yep.
And then literally in the same minute, we go 3-0 up with Morella scoring. It was a free kick from Barisic from the left to the back post, headed back across goal by Stewart, right to Morella, who really only had to tap it in. Yep. Great vision from Stewart there.
Brilliant, yes. Another player that's not had a lot of game time, Derek, so you know, for him to do that and simple, straightforward goal for Morello's excellent stuff.
Yep. 72nd minute, Red Imps with a shot, but right at McGregor and comfortably gathered. 81st minute, ball played by Patterson from the right on the ground to the edge of the box at the centre for Morelos, who turns it into a decent shot and the keeper makes a good save. Again, he had to take two bites of it, but we never got the second bite there. And then we went 4-0 up on the 83rd minute with Defoe scoring. The cameras went down, nobody's seen it live. However, the replay shown, however, Patterson down the right, cuts it in, passes in on the edge of the box. It was a dummy by Morelos. Hadji picks it up, passes to Defoe, who had his back towards goal, moves away from goal, a quick turn and a snapshot into the back of net. That was just classic Defoe, that. I mean,
yeah, brilliant.
The vision and the skill to do that, and it was outstanding. Great wee dummy by Morelos, and Patterson, ever since he came on, he was been outstanding in this game and certainly one for the future. If not, you know, can he do a job just now?
Yeah, and it's someone that I know they've got real high hopes for as well, Derek. He certainly looks the part, doesn't he? And for Defoe, for a guy to have been out, you know, for quite a while, to come straight into the game and just really be on a few minutes and to pull off something like that, again, shows the guy is a class act. I'm delighted to see him back.
Absolutely. 85th minute, Barisic puts a fast-paced cross in from the left, hits off the arm of Defoe and into the back of the net, however, quite obviously ruled a foul. However, 2 minutes later, on the 87th minute, we rounded out the game, going 5-0 up with Morelos getting his second of the game. For some strange reason, it seemed to be that Red Imps were playing a very high line, which just kind of goes against what you're want to do when you're so many goals down. The ball was played to Defoe on the right-hand side, feeds Morelos the ball, picks it up on the edge of the box, who dinks it past the keeper. Just a great incisive goal once again. Again, Defoe involved and Morelos playing a great shot past the keeper. Just a great all-round move again.
Yeah, it was. Great link-up play as well, Derek. Great awareness by Defoe and a fantastic goal by Morelos. And, you know, confidence from the first goal growing, and that's what we want to see.
Yes. So just in that game there, obviously it means we qualify for round three of the qualifiers, which we'll get into. You know, the media were before the game, you know, quite apoplectic about the fact that we were staying on a £120 million super yacht, you know, which was like £200 a room, you know, for a skint team, we're not doing too bad, eh?
Well, that's it. Again, that's all the drug cartel money Derek was pouring in there.
But as well, the shocking thing as well is for a supposed decent TV network, Premier Sports, the feed was absolutely abysmal, apparently, for those who were watching it. It kept breaking up. The fourth goal, everybody lost at that point. Premier Sports decided to blame it on, you know, their third-party local suppliers. And the only trouble we had on RTV was the with the fourth goal, where I think everything went down there. So a bit strange, and SFA have in their wisdom decided to I think give the Scottish Cup to Premier Sports. So we'll need to see how that pans out, won't we?
Excellent. Aye, great stuff.
Yes. So next game we've got to cover, the last game here, is on Sunday the 20th of September. It was away to Hibs and we drew 2-2. Five changes from the Imps game. We lined up McLaughlin, Tavernier, Hellander, Goldson, Hadji, Davis, Kent, Kamara, Morelos, Barisic and Arfield. On the subs bench were McGregor, Bassey, Edmondson, Defoe, Itten, Patterson, Jones, Balogun and Barjonas. Disappointing to say the least, wasn't it, Dave?
Yes, it certainly was, Derek. I think we all had high hopes of this game, hoping and praying that we were going to maintain our, you know, record of clean sheets. Certainly going in quite confident, especially with the defence, going in quite confident. And again, turning into one of these old stories, Derek, isn't it? I'll let you get into it.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of this, you know, clean sheet record, to be honest with you, see if it meant 3 points, I would quite happily, you know, win 2-1 every single game, or 3-2 or whatever it is. I mean, yeah, it's good to have, but it doesn't get us the points at the end of the day. In this game, as I said in the post-match, I think ultimately we bottled it because we. It's not as if we played bad. We certainly played bad in defence. We certainly had enough chances, though, to wrap up the game. And it was always going to be the first big test of the season because, obviously, Hibs sitting in second place. So, but anyway, the first half, we started off bright enough, moving the ball about well. And then from about the 15-minute mark onwards, we completely switched off. We allowed ourselves to be bullied off the ball. That and some dirty play by Hibs that went unpunished. That coincided with us seeming to run out of ideas. We got the ball to the wing. We crossed to nobody. That's when we could actually find a pass. Our passing went completely missing. I think we're trying to be too clever again, trying to walk the ball into the net and not shooting. All Hibs had to do was stand up to it. They didn't even need to make, you know, life-saving challenges or anything like that, as it was really pretty powder puffs from us. We can play some lovely stuff at times, but at the same time, we can be so timid. Really disappointing.
Yeah, again, it's like a lot of games that we've witnessed already, Derek, isn't it? It was very sort of deja vu-ish, you know, the way that it was going. And as you say, in the early stages, I thought, oh God, this just, you could just tell at that point that, you know, we're going to run into some problems. And, you know, I hate that. I hate this expecting something's going to go wrong. It seems to me I've not felt like we're really going to go out and hammer a team, you know, for a long time. There's always that bit of doubt in the back of your head, especially this game. I was confident in the Dundee United game, but for this game, there's just always that wee niggling doubt in the back of my head, and I hate that. It's a nightmare, and unfortunately, that's how it turned out in the end.
Yeah. So the first 5 minutes, we started off at pace from both teams, who were going from one end of the pitch to the other. It looked as if it was settling to be a fantastic game. 10th minute, corner in from the right. Morelos got a skiff of a header to it, which bounces off the ground and wide. If he had connected it, it was going into the back of the net.
Yeah.
How many times do we need to say this as well?
I know.
13th minute, lovely move down the right, ended in a pass into the box to Hadji. He then cuts it back to the near edge of the box to Arfield, who has a low, powerful shot, going goal bound, however blocked by the defender. 16th minute, was a corner from the left by Barisic, right to the back post. Goldson gets his head to it and it loops into the arms of the keeper for an easy take. 17th minute, long pass up to the Hibs attacker on the edge of the box. He chests it, turns, has a great shot. It was going into the bottom left corner, however, fantastic save by McLaughlin to put out for the corner. And then on this 21st minute, we went a goal down with Hibs scoring. It was a long diagonal from left to right, gets across into the box on the deck after Barisic hesitated to actually make a tackle, comes right to the unmarked man who had a first time shot through the legs of the keeper. So ultimately there, you've got Barisic being really poor and not actually just going out and attacking the ball. He just held off and allowed the player to get the cross in. And then the unmarked man in the box, I think it was meant to be Davis picking him up. He was an acres of space. Nobody picked him up at all. And then through the legs of the keeper, could you argue the keeper could have maybe done better there? It's poor when the keeper's on his line that a ball goes through his legs. But for the amount of times he saved us both in this game and other games, you know, I'm not going to put the blame on him at all in this one because the defence should have done their job properly.
It was poor, Derek. Again, I'm not blaming Steve Davis here, but you know, a guy has experience. You know, he must have been aware, you know, of the player in there. Quite surprised that he was left with that amount of room and quite a simple, straightforward goal. I think that's more disappointing than anything, isn't it? That the fact that it was such a straightforward cut back and, you know, in an area like that to be able to get the shot away, you know, with very little challenge, you know, is very disappointing considering how well the defence has been playing. So, yeah, it was a big setback at that stage of the game.
Yep. 34th minute. Ryan Portis with an off-the-ball incident once again with Morelos. It looked to be a shoulder, if not a forearm, to the head of Morelos. He got a yellow card for it. It could have been a red, absolutely. Yep. It arguably should have been a red.
Yep, and definitely. Mm-hmm.
That's what's annoying when it's an off-the-ball incident like that, when there's no attempt to go for the ball, then you've got to say, if the referee's seen that, which he clearly has, then why is it not a red card if it's a dangerous play like that? So I suppose it depends what's been put in the match report of what he's seen, but another Hibs player was booked a few minutes later for virtually the exact same incident on Hadji this time. Hadji went down injured for a bit, and I think it was, I wasn't watching Sky or whoever was beaming it, but Chris Boyd said that was a straight red card. So
yep.
just at the same time, if he's only booked Porteous, then he's I suppose all he can do is book this player as well, so he set the precedent there. However, we did score the equaliser right on the stroke of half-time on the 46th minute, out of absolutely nothing as well. Down the right-hand side, a lovely cross into the back post by Kent. Lovely control with Morelos. I think it was initially his chest, then his foot, and then he shoots it into the back of the net on the volley, I think it was, from the six-yard box. Great skill by Morelos, a great cross by Kent as well. And as I said, out of nothing.
Yeah, I know. And as you say, I can just show you this sort of what Kent can do. We all know he's been playing really well this season, but you know, this, you know, wee deft touch and he's off in a fantastic ball in. And again, for Morelos, absolutely brilliant. I think the two goals midweek will have done him the world of good, and it was, you know, an excellent finish by him, quite a tight angle as well, and a great time to be getting back into the game, because at that stage, Derek, it was getting to there. If we had went in 1-0 down at half time, it would have, you know, we would have, us as fans, and I hate being like this, like I said, we can be very down on the team, and it would have totally have changed the way that we were thinking, and, you know, probably the team as well, you know, trying to struggle back to even get a draw. So a fantastic time to score and to raise hopes in the second half. And at that point, I was really quite hopeful, Derek. I went in really, really positive into half time and delighted, you know, that we'd scored and really looked forward to the second half.
Yeah. So in the 46th minute, a corner in from the right from Hibbs bounces and comes to the head of the attacker, who from about the penalty spot put in a header, but it was a weak effort and comfortable save for McLaughlin. And, you know, your expectations were certainly well founded, because in the 56th minute, we scored our second, went 2-1 up with Arfield scoring. It was a bit of genius play, to be honest. Tavernier to Arfield on the right, who plays it on the deck into the box for Arfield, who lays it off to Hadji, who plays it quickly back to him for Arfield to have a shot off the post and in by the hand of the keeper. It was just that very close, tight-knit play from Arfield to Hadji there, which was just genius. I know the distances weren't great on it, but just the skill, the precision of it there was just absolutely genius from them both.
Yeah, great movement. And as you say, the control and the touches and the awareness was fantastic. I thought Arfield had actually had a very good game. I think he was excellent, you know, since he was playing in the Red Imps game. I think that's, you know, done him the world of good as well. He was starting to become a bit of a forgotten man for us, and we all know that he could come up with really vital goals for us, and that certainly was, and it was excellent. Great finish from him as well. Absolutely brilliant.
60th minute, a quick break up the park after Davis recovered from his own mistake in our box. Great ball by Hadji to play to Kent, going forward, has a shot outside the box, forcing the keeper into a great dive and save. 65th minute, Hibbs crossed the ball from the left. Hibbs player flicked the ball goalwards from 7 yards. A great save from McLaughlin, which keeps the ball out. The ball was spilled, a bit of a scramble in the box, and eventually cleared. Living dangerously at this point, and this is when the point can, for me, changed. We had to make changes at this point. We never did once again.
Yeah,
it was coming for about 5 minutes beforehand, and then Hibbs, I think, really kind of taken a lot of the possession, a lot of the pressure, and no changes came. And once again, we're talking about Steven Gerrard not making changes at the vital time when it's clear that the game has changed to our detriment.
No, I agree 100%, Derek. As you say, it was just after the sort of lucky escape that we had there, the warning signs were there. Hibs were getting on the ball a hell of a lot more. They were, you know, getting forward. And as you say, you know, at that point, maybe bringing on another, you know, sort of defensive-minded midfield or something like that. Just to pick up extra men, extra runners and things like that. But it wasn't to be, and unfortunately we were punished and changed the whole game for us.
Yeah, absolutely. 68th minute, snapshot from 25 yards from Hadji, caught the keeper unaware, who pulled off a good save. 70th minute, was a corner in from the left by Kent, Hellander with a head just by the right post. And then on the 71st minute, we conceded a goal and went 2-2. Goldson with a poor pass on the edge of the box, loses possession. It was passed wide. The Hibs player was clearly offside, but nothing given, as per usual, despite the shots, subsequent shots showing that the linesman was right in line with it, very close distance away from it as well. And for him not to see that is absolutely abysmal. Tavernier cuts across the attacker in the box, who, if there was any touches at all there, he would have went down like a sack of spuds. And a foul would have been given, if not a red card as well. Ball on the edge of the box. Tavernier does absolutely nothing to attack the ball, much like Barisic for the first goal. He allows the attacker to cross in, into the back post. The Hibs attacker heads it past the keeper. And Hellander, I don't know what he was doing there. I don't know if he was getting held down or what, but if not, it was a piss poor, you know, attempted jump to try and get that ball as well. So an absolute calamity of errors there, starting from Goldson. Rather than doing what he'd been doing all season so far and just clearing his lines, he tried to play the fancy wee pass out, which he lost out to. Tavernier, pish defending again, not attacking the player. And then just a bit of poor play from Hellander as well, not clearing his lines.
Aye, as you say, Derek, there's no one player we can pinpoint there to say that, you know, they could have done better. It was nearly the whole defence, even McLaughlin as well in goals, you know. And I know it's maybe, you know, a bit harsh, but, you know, we've seen him pull off absolutely incredible saves, and it seemed to be sort of, you know, a header which, you know, looking back, he may have been able to get a hand to as well. So as you say, going by comedy of errors and poor defending, it's, you know, the whole defence has been at fault there, because not one of them has stood up to the challenge, and it was really quite poor because, you know, it was originally from our own mistake, and again, being punished by our own mistakes, and that makes it even more frustrating, doesn't it?
Yeah, and this is what I keep saying as well, and I'm not going to take anything away from them, because the Leverkusen goal aside, now that was a great piece of skill as well from the Leverkusen player. Tavernier and Goldson have been absolutely solid this year. Tavernier in the last few games, obviously adding a couple of goals as well. But these are the defensive lapses which cost us time and time again, and which cost us points and results last year as well. And as you're right, it's not just one player you've got to pin this on. It's a whole bunch. And it just so happens that it's the two people we've been talking about time and time again, about having concentration lapses in defence. As I said, they've been solid, both of them, this season. And this is the first time that they've arguably been tested defensively this season.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they failed.
Yep.
So what else can you deduce from that? It's two pieces of bad play. They need to learn from it. That's you know, all I can really say about that.
I know.
But anyway, in the 75th minute, Hadji came off and Defoe came on. As I said in the post-match, I just don't understand that substitution at all. Well, we're losing out in midfield, so you take a midfield, like an attacking midfielder off and put a striker on. So was Defoe or somebody else going to drop back? Doesn't make sense there. I would have stuck another attacking midfielder on to try and shore up that midfield to try and get the goal. We already had Morelos was still on the field at that point as well. I think Davis, he was hit and miss in this game, largely missed, unfortunately, and I would have taken him off. Anyway, the last piece of play we've got here is, folk are maybe making a bit too much of it, to be honest, but it was a great piece of play, a long ball up through the middle of the Hibs box by Davis. Arfield with a volley right at the keeper, who pulls off a great save, comes back out to Arfield, who tries to pass it past the keeper again, but makes another great save and eventually knocked out for the corner. Now, I think both of them were great saves, and I think people were criticising Arfield for the second chance, which, you know, could it have been a wee bit lazy and it should have been just blasted rather than a pass, potentially, but I felt it was two great saves by the keeper.
Yeah, but I think Arfield has came out himself and kind of putting the responsibility of that, you know, on himself. I think he's taking it quite badly himself by coming out and sort of apologising for the miss. So I don't know if that's what's maybe played into a lot of people's minds there, Derek. Again, it's hindsight, isn't it? He did try and place the second shot where the better option would have been just to thump it. And again, unfortunately for us, it wasn't to be. Another frustrating time.
Yep. And the last piece of play we've got is the 84th minute, where Kamara came off and Itten came on. Now, you can't blame Itten for anything there. It's still getting up to speed with the game, and I think he needs more game time as well. But anyway, 2 points dropped, and that's what the disappointing thing is. And as I said in the post-match, I'm not going to go overboard like some people. You know, some people are calling, you know, this vanity project of Gerrard needs to end now, and we need, you know, get him out now, etc., etc. Yeah, he's still not learning certain things when it comes to substitutions. You need to make changes earlier than he has been doing. However, I don't see anybody, complaining at the starting lineup because I felt it was the strongest team we could have probably put out. Yeah, it was maybe lacking in the bench because of injuries. I think we had four defenders on and a lack of midfielders. So yeah, that's, I think we're still trying to get one or two midfielders in the transfer window. It was the strongest first team we could have put out, I felt. We're not going to go through every single game winning. We just know that. It's going to be one of these seasons. It's a very rare occasion that that happens. You know, if it happened every year where we could go through every single game without dropping any points, then it would happen a hell of a lot more than it does. And, you know, Celtic are going to drop points as well. But it's left us in the league, played 8, won 6, drawn 2, lost 0, scored 17, conceded 2, goal difference plus 15, and we're on 20 points. We're on top just now, one ahead of Celtic, but they've got a game in hand and we are level on goal difference. We're 3 ahead of Hibs and we're 8 ahead of Aberdeen, who've got 2 games in hand. So, not the greatest it could have been. Celtic, you know, at the weekend, as much as we've still got to focus on our own game first, yes, you know, Celtic apparently weren't great shakes either, so you've got to appreciate they are going to drop points as well at some point. Well, they're bound to.
Certain decisions are going for them that are going against us. Derek, going by the reports that I've had, I've not seen their game at all. I don't watch their games unless they're playing against us. Certainly what I've read on social media, they got a major decision for them when it came to a sort of offside decision, whereas the major offside decision, which should have went for us, went against us. It's you know, it's fine margins here again. We just don't seem to be catching a break, Derek, and it's decisions like that, these decisions that ultimately cost you points. And looking back at, you know, great winning seasons that we've had, there have been a number of times that we've won games by one goal and we've been able, you know, we've had the players to have the mentality to be able to, you know, keep it like that. But for some reason, we seem to, as you say, bottle it when, you know, the time comes. And that's the worrying point for me. I'm not being stupid enough to throw the towel in our end, Derek, because we are at this present moment in time top of the league. And, you know, we've only conceded 2 goals all season, which is excellent. It's just the manner and the way that happened is very annoying, you know, for us. I still feel that we should be a hell of a lot more clinical, especially in the big games, and, you know, we're not. And I honestly don't know what the solution is. I still don't think our shape is right, Derek, but I've been saying that for a long time. I really feel that we're missing somebody else on, you know, that can genuinely play on the right in a more forward position. I feel that we are shoehorning players into that sort of right-hand side, the attack position. I think the manager thought he had it with Roof, because, you know, that Roof can play anywhere up front, but fortunately he wasn't playing. And I just feel that, you know, playing strikers on the right-hand side or attacking midfielders on the right-hand side, it's just, it's, I don't know what it is. I don't know if we're needing just to go back to basics and, you know, play the two up front. Even if it is playing Ryan Kent up front with one striker and just letting Kent float about like what we've done in the past with certain players, I honestly don't know. But we're struggling on that side of the ball, I think. And, you know, we have got Tav that has been playing better and, you know, going down the right and putting, you know, some good balls and stuff like that in. But I think he does need help again there. That's my own personal opinion. Folk might say, no, that's a lot of shite. We need a centre midfielder that can really put, you know, give us a goal threat. But that's my own opinion that we've got, that we've not fixed. I just feel that we're off balance a lot, Derek. I don't know what your feelings are on that.
I mean, I don't know if it's, you've got to remember, we've got quite a few players that we've signed that are recently out injured. So that might play into it a wee bit. It's again, stick to the 4-4-2, you know, go 4-4-2, and you've got somebody playing up along with Alfie that can maybe provide that outlet, yeah, because he drops back still again too much. If there's not anything working from up front, he drops back, which is great because we've seen him in defence sometimes and making these last minute challenges in defence. But when we break forward, we're missing that player up front where somebody needs to fill that hole. So
And we don't have that. That's what I'm saying. Even if we did go to a 4-4-2, we've still not got the player that can play on that right side of midfielder going forward. And that's, you know, a position that I would have said was a must for us just to give us that bit of balance. But, you know, I'm hoping that the manager has got somebody in mind, you know, that we can bring in. There has been a lot of rumours and stuff like that, but still nothing as yet. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens there. But disappointing result in the end, Derek. I think we were all really hoping. Every Rangers supporter I spoke to before the game said this is a big test for us to prove that we are, you know, we've got the bottle. And I think we were all really up for it as fans, you know, that we were going to go and really show everybody. And unfortunately, again, it makes us look as if we have bottled it, doesn't it? And it's just really disappointing.
Yeah. So it leads us into the next games now, which the next game is on Thursday, the 24th of September. It's away to Willem Twee in the Europa League Round 3 qualifiers. And that today has been moved to 8 p.m, which is good because I think it was a 6 p.m. kickoff earlier. So
Shite for me, Derek, because I'm working and I was going to watch it at 6 o'clock and then leave straight for my work. Now I'm going to miss it completely. So I'm rather annoyed about that.
Oh, well.
So you would just have to keep me updated, Derek. That's what you're going to have to do.
Oh, fuck's sake. Hard enough watching the game and keeping notes for the game. So on the next game after that is Sunday the 27th of September, away to Motherwell in the Premiership. That's a midday kickoff. Now, they just thumped Aberdeen 3-0 there. I know Motherwell have not been playing great, but, you know, that's a big result for them as well.
Exactly.
Next game, if we get past Willem Twee, it will be Thursday the 1st of October. It's a home draw to either Hajduk Split or Galatasaray. So a massive, massive game there. We beat them and we're into the group stages. That's if we get past Willem Twee, obviously. Hard tie either way, I think. I don't know too much about Split, but obviously for them to get to that place, then they're obviously doing something right. Galatasaray, they finished sixth in their league last year. They're not the same team as what they used to be, absolutely. But again, you know, you come up against a Turkish team, it's always going to be hard.
Yeah, Derek, I'm not looking any further forward than Thursday. I think I've sort of promised myself that from the start of the season, I'm basically going to just try and concentrate on our next match. You know, this side, you know, for the Dutch league, I'll be a very good team. We've beaten much better teams or higher standards than them, you know, over the last few seasons. So here's hoping they can do it on Thursday. As I say, I think it will be a difficult match, but, you know, I'll wait and see. I'll worry about either Galatasaray or Hajduk Split after we've beaten that team. So we'll just have to wait and see. And as I say, I'll not even get to see it, unfortunately. So that's hopefully they can go out and just put on another impressive European performance as we have done over the last two seasons.
Yep. This next game depends on what happens with the potential Galatasaray or Split game, which would be Friday the 2nd of October at home to Ross County in the Premiership. Now, that's a 19:45 kickoff. So obviously that game will be postponed if we do get through to this next round. And the next game after that is the big one, Saturday the 17th of October, away to Celtic in the Premiership. That's a 12:30 kickoff. So certainly all to play for, a tough run of games coming up as ever. You've just got to get through them.
One game at a time, as I say, Derek. We'll have a hard game on Thursday. As you say, unfortunately for us, Motherwell will take huge confidence in that victory over Aberdeen, and quite rightly so. They'll be well up for it, you know, when we play them on Sunday. So, you know, we just have to hope the next two matches that we go out, be as professional as possible and get out of there with two wins, and I'll be absolutely delighted with that.
Yeah. So, it's now time for the classic match.
And there it is! The final whistle's gone! Rangers have won the European Cup Winners' Cup!
So, I did say it's time for the classic match. However, when I come to update the website, it's going to say a caption underneath this game I'm going to put here is, David is a lazy arsehole.
No, come on, you can't blame that on me this time, come on. This has been, because of work commitments and other things, we have put this pod together at short notice. I know our supreme professionalism, it doesn't sound like that, but it has been at very short notice and I've not had enough time to go in and prepare a classic match. just with the way that circumstances are. And I think, Derek, to be fair, I think this is maybe the first time that this has happened in maybe about the last 3 years or something like that. So it can't be that bad, surely. So, and delighted with the classic match that we're going over again, because it's certainly one of the biggest matches in our club's history. So I hope everybody enjoys it anyway, because it was certainly a fantastic game and one that we'll never forget. So.
Yes. So what we're going to do is we're going to replay what we done in our first ever episode of the iReady podcast back in season one, episode one. And that was like way back in, I think it was September 2013. So
my God.
Well, we'll need to give our apologies for the poor audio quality. And I don't think we've got any match commentary or anything like that when the goals go in. But basically, we're just ripping the right off of our first ever episode, because obviously, we've been going for, this is the eighth season now. There's people who've brought, new listeners might have not heard what we've said about the game before, and probably haven't went back, and probably quite rightly, mind you. But.
And hopefully it will now make us sound extremely professional, you know, when we go back to listen to that one. So, but I hope everybody enjoys it regardless.
Yes, enjoy.
Rangers fans in the last 20 years will all relate to this game. We all talk about it quite a lot. We all talk about where we were when it happened. We all talk about what we did at the end of the match. It's just one of these games, I think, that will live with all us Rangers fans, possibly for the rest of their life. Now, the year was 2005, and the date was the 22nd of May, a Sunday. That day, for all us Rangers fans, will forever be known as Helicopter Sunday.
Craigan's going to play this. It's a long one up there. Varga, falling shot. He's fallen. He's scored. He's scored. McDonald scored for Motherwell. Scott McDonald has scored. The Celtic players can't believe it. They're dead in their feet. Motherwell have scored. 1-1 in Fir Park. The title will be heading to Easter Road to Rangers. The helicopter is changing direction.
Now, as you're all aware, at that point, it was going into the last game of the season. Celtic were a point clear from us, and they were playing away at Fir Park against Motherwell, and all they had to do was win their game to clinch the title. We had to pray that Celtic dropped points, whether they, you know, drew the match or they got beat, and we had to win. And at the time, the supporters club that I went with, there was five friends that had all put in for tickets, and we'd only managed to get three tickets between us, so we kind of drew lots. I was unlucky, I didn't get a ticket, as was one of my other mates, and we were frantically searching for a pub that would show the Rangers game. And every pub in the town that we went out in was showing the Celtic game. Every single pub, there were Celtic fans everywhere. And I stumbled across one pub that had a big sign outside saying Rangers game only. So we went in there, early doors, we got a great seat right in front of the giant screen, and slowly but surely it filled up to the brim with Rangers fans coming in to watch the game. And we kind of says to each other, look, regardless what happens, we'll go, we'll have a few beers, we'll watch the match. And the game kicked off, had quite a few pints, and then we got news, I think possibly about half an hour, but half past two, that Chris Sutton had scored for Celtic. So they were well on their way to winning the league. So we kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, oh well, we kept watching the game. And then into the second half, of course, Nacho Novo popped up, scored the goal for Rangers to make it 1-0 to us. We hadn't heard anything else coming from the game at Motherwell. The game was going on. And I just had a gut feeling. Oh, you okay there?
Oh, that was my phone falling off the table.
Oh, right, okay. I just had a gut feeling at that point that something was going to happen. I don't know why, and I turned to my mate at the time. I says, things have gone quiet. We only need Motherwell to score a goal. Things have gone quiet. And then, literally, with minutes to go, we heard a scream coming from Rangers fans in the pub. And we just knew that something had happened, something great had happened at Motherwell. And then, lo and behold, Scott McDonald scores the equaliser. We see on the pitch that the news has got to the Rangers players. You've got Barry Ferguson and Alec Ray, you could see that they knew what was going on. They knew they had kind of won the league, and Rangers and Hibs at that point, Hibs had made it into Europe, I believe. They weren't looking to do anything, and then it was possibly the worst game in football history at the Rangers game for them, because it just became a game of passe. They were passing the ball about at the back. They knew that they just had to hold on to the final whistle. And at that point, because of the pub that I was in and we couldn't hear anything for everyone celebrating, I genuinely thought that the Celtic game had finished a draw. I had no idea that Motherwell had actually went on and won the match 2-1. Everybody was celebrating, the Rangers players were celebrating, and it wasn't until about half an hour after that that my wife, and then fiancé at the time, came into the pub later on, and she says, "Can you believe that Celtic got beat?" And I says, "What do you mean they got beat? It was a draw." She says, "No, they got beat 2-1. And, you know, it was just incredible. It's a day that I'll remember. I was absolutely steaming by the end of the night. We met up with the three guys who were lucky enough to get the tickets. We met up with them later. All these pubs that were full of Celtic supporters were just like empty now, and it was just all the Rangers fans that were out in the town, and it was just a fantastic night. I got really drunk and I was really ill in the morning, but it's a game I'll remember for the rest of my life, as will the vast majority of Rangers supporters. Everyone will say to you, "Where were you Helicopter Sunday? What were you doing at Helicopter Sunday?" And everyone instantly knows what they were doing at that time. It's like a iconic moment for us Rangers fans. I don't know about yourself, where you were at the time, or if you've got any special memories of that day, but I'm sure there's Rangers fans out there that will say, "Oh, I remember where I was when that happened." And
yeah, I mean, I was up watching that at home with my dad. I was due to be working later on that night, which was, I was kind of, I gutted that, because at the start of the game we knew that, or we thought anyway, that Celtic were going to win it. There was really no hope. It was all really down to, you know, as long as we could win, you know, it's up to Motherwell to do a job for us. So, as you said, it was, you know, we scored, we done our job. The game kind of, you know, was really boring for the Rangers game after that. And then all of a sudden, you know, like we heard the roar from the crowd, and this was on the TV. We could hear all the Rangers fans singing, and chanting, and screaming. And we quickly switched it over because the two of the TV channels were showing the games consecutively. And we've seen that Scott McDonald has scored. I let out the biggest scream of my life. I'd honestly, I lost my voice from that point on. I was jumping up and down. The place was going, this was just me and my dad. You would have thought that there was a crowd of about a million people in there. It was absolutely amazing. And then all of a sudden we switched it back. We were absolutely stunned in disbelief. Then, you know, all of a sudden we heard another chant from the Rangers fans, a big scream. So we thought, "Oh yeah, is that game finished now?" You know, we turned it over. Scott McDonald scored again.
I know.
The second biggest scream I've ever let out in my life. Then all of a sudden, my next door neighbours were having a party and friends over. This random guy just barges right into your house. "Look, what's happened? What's happened?" And we tell him the kind of score. He starts screaming as loud as he can as well.
That's total stranger.
Total stranger, you know, barges into your house. Luckily, he was a Rangers fan, and you know that, so. Otherwise, it could have been quite nasty. My mum would have had to come through with kitchen knives and things. But it was incredible. I lost my voice. As I said, I was working later that night, and I was dreading it before. It was the best feeling ever, because I knew I was working with a couple of Celtic fans. One of them in particular was really bitter. They could not speak at all that night. They were just so, you know, down in the dumps. They were going about their work, just, you know, with a face like thunder.
One thing that I can remember, and I'm hoping that someone can clear this up for me. I don't know if you've heard this. It's possibly an urban myth about this game. I don't know, unless we actually spoke to the people involved. But I've been told by quite a few people that at the time that this was all going on, Alec Ray's wife was apparently in New York. I don't know. She was a trip of some sort. I think that deep down she must have thought the Rangers weren't going to win the league and whatnot. And apparently, again, this is maybe a lot of rubbish, I don't know, but I've been told she was apparently walking about in New York and she gets a phone call on her mobile from her husband, who is in the dressing room after the game celebrating. He phoned his wife, he got a bit emotional and he started crying. So Alex Ray's wife, hearing Alex on the phone crying, starts crying herself, tears of joy because her husband's so happy but so emotional, and she's standing in the middle of a very busy street crying. And the next minute, this big guy comes up behind her with a Yorkshire accent, because the accent's straight away, and asks her if she's okay. And she turns around and she looks at him, she says, yeah. And he says, what's wrong? And she says, Rangers have won the league. And the chap says, oh God, don't tell me that's enough to make anybody cry. And it turns out that it was Mick McCarthy.
If that story's true, that is brilliant.
It's again, that's, but I've heard that from quite a few people, that this was Mick McCarthy, and he was going to console her, and when she said that Rangers won the league, he went, oh, that's enough to make anybody cry, and shook his head and walked on. So I would love to find out that that's a true story. So if anybody knows Alec Ray or knows his wife or anything, please let us know if that's a true story, because that is a bit of an urban myth out there that I've certainly heard. But if that's a true story, that's just a classic for, you know, another classic story for Helicopter Sunday. This is where every week we're going to be doing a classic match, and it's going to be games that I've attended or Derek's attended, you know, games that stick in my mind. We've been talking about this a lot, you know, in any time that we've been speaking about the pod, about games that we could do. There's so many to choose from, but that was certainly the first game that I really think that we had to cover was Helicopter Sunday. But I might go back a few years before that and speak about certain games and that, but Helicopter Sunday, one of the greatest days of being a Rangers fan, I believe, and everybody's got their memories, so I hope that put a smile on everybody's face just thinking about that and thinking about where they were and how they celebrated and all of that.
So what a game that was. It will always live in the memory of every Rangers fan who was alive and being able to remember that point, won't it? It was a phenomenal day. You'll never forget it. It's something, you know, that will be told throughout the generations about how amazing that day was.
Yeah, and how incredible it was as well, Derek, and how it all unfolded in front of us. You know, it was against all the odds as well, so, you know, absolutely sensational. And as you say, it's something that will be, it's like folklore, isn't it, amongst the Rangers supporters, and just, you know, a day that I'll certainly never forget. Absolutely tremendous.
Just an FYI here, Dave, the last episode we done of this podcast was on the 5th of September. It's now the 21st of September, and Dave never had any time to do a new classic match.
That's correct, yes.
Sorry, Dave. I had to throw that one in there.
I don't have to defend myself. I know the reasons. You're just trying to shame me, and it's not going to work.
We should have done one when we went out to the pub the other day.
Exactly, we should have. Exactly, but aye, we had other things to do, namely drinking. So
yes, that's, yep. Exactly. So it's now time for the news. So a few stories to cover here. There was a couple I want to just cover quickly because we obviously had to try and cut some stories out of the last podcast because it ran for over 2 hours with Craig in the podcast. So we'll certainly get him back on, and we'll try and cut the podcast down in time as well when he comes back on. But anyway, there was a deliberate fire attack on Alan McGregor's car at his home. A car was vandalised previously, not long ago, prior to that as well. Ongoing investigation into this, so don't want to say too much, but it's very worrying. It's not the first Rangers player's car to be targeted. And remember, we had the team bus a few years ago destroyed, which never even got used as well, and I don't think that even got resolved as well. So a really worrying turn of events there when players' property is getting set alight, which you never know what could happen with stuff like that. It's very, exactly, very serious.
Really, really serious, and, you know, worrying for the player as well. Very unsettling also that, you know, things like that happened. What the motive is, we don't know, but certainly we don't like to hear anything like that happening, regardless who plays for who. You know, it's, you know, really, really serious stuff, and, you know, it's, you know, as you say, we can't really speak about it because it is ongoing, but surely I'm hoping that, you know, the truth will come out as to what's happened, and we'll just have to wait and see. But definitely worrying times, Derek.
Yeah. Next story here that I meant to cover in the last one, and again, can't really say too much of it because it's still ongoing through civil legal proceedings, but former director Imran Ahmed, former CEO Charles Green are to receive a formal public apology from the Lord Advocate and Police Scotland, with the latter to get damages following the drop charges in 2018 over the Rangers takeover. Following on from that, former administrators David Whitehouse and Paul Clark have been awarded £600,000 between them after the Crown Office had admitted that the case against them was unlawful and motivated by malice. So there's a lot of legal connotations involved in this there. Again, I'm not going to go too much into it. However, again, it does turn it round to see, well, if this has been the case, is there any legal recourse for either Rangers or the liquidators of the old co in terms of, well, if things had been done correctly, then there might have been a recourse initially. So we'll need to watch this space. Somebody's got off with something. I'm not going to say who. And no, it's just an absolute abomination that things have happened the way it has. And nobody's going to be held account for the things that went on legally or illegally at Rangers during those time.
Something that we were all hoping wasn't going to happen, Derek. We have all, you know, pinned our hope on something being done, someone being found guilty, you know, of wrongdoing. We all know that something has happened exactly like what you said. We've got to be careful what we say here. But as you say, someone looks as if they're going to be getting off scot-free of, you know, doing, you know, absolutely horrendous things towards their club. And it's just quite heartbreaking at the moment, and we can only hope that the truth will come out one day, exactly what's went on. You know, we just really have to hope and pray, but it brings a bad taste to your mouth and brings back horrible, horrible memories as well.
Yeah. So the last of the previous stories that I meant to cover was that the SPFL have agreed a 5-year deal with ESPN to show Premiership games across America. Championship League One, League Two and League Cup games will also be shown. It was previously split over multiple networks in America. For me, with clubs getting their own TV channels up and running with the streaming as well, it feels rather underhanded from the SPFL for the fact that it might hinder any clubs-led TV deals going forward, given the length of it. You know, why did they need to agree 5-year deal? I mean, the clubs are now making headway in terms of trying to get their own stuff together. It seems to be working. Why not allow the clubs to do that? I know the reason why, because the SPFL don't get the cut of anything.
Well, that's exactly what it is, Derek. It's exactly what it is. And as you say, it's a long deal, a long-term deal to try and stop that, to make sure that there's still a stream going to them as well, you know, and they'll turn it around and say it's a fantastic deal for the clubs in Scotland and stuff like that, when it is. It's all to do with self-interest, Derek, 100%.
Yeah. So, more current news now. Gerrard got the manager of the month, and Kent got the player of the month for awards for August. So, very justified, both of them there.
Excellent, yeah.
Next one here, which is really exciting, is our tunnel has been renovated. Apparently the last time it was done was about 30 years ago. It looks, for me, absolutely stunning. The panels have been retained but painted black. There's been blue paint put on the bottom and blue neon all about the place, and kind of silverish plaques and all that. Yeah. And a big Rangers badge, which is all lit up. Some Rangers dads have been saying it looks like a nightclub, but again, I think it's stunning. It's very modern and it's done very tastefully, and if it really has been 30 years since the tunnel's been done, I think it's well overdue, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. We need to move with times, Derek, and the fact that we are still able to keep, you know, a lot of it, you know, traditional as well as modernising as well, really changes the look. It looks really, really impressive. I'm a Rangers da, Derek, and I was really impressed by it. So there you go. No, really, really pleased. And when, you know, we do the next sort of tour of Ibrox, I'll be looking forward to seeing that, because, you know, I did think it looked, you know, pretty stunning.
Yep. Again, I want to watch what we say in this one, but the man who recorded himself breaking into Ibrox to plant a flag, shout obscenities and spit on the pitch after Celtic were awarded the title has been to court. He's pled not guilty.
Does it surprise you?
He put a fucking video up of it. It's mistaken identity, Your Honour.
See that video that I recorded in my cell, it wasn't me.
But again, we want to leave that there. His trial diet is set for January.
So. Oh dear, right, okay.
Castor had a focus group with a select amount of fans. I think there was like 10 or 15 fans, I think, involved in this, and it was to discuss ongoing issues. I think, as usual, with some of these things, it did stray into other realms, which Castor might have only had part to deal with and all that kind of thing, but it seems to have been well received. A lot of people expecting there to be a lot more information forthcoming. It's a focus group.
Yeah.
It's one of these things. There's going to be several. It seems we just need to, yes, they've admitted there has been issues. As long as they get rectified, and that's the thing, they're ultimately a brand new outfit that started up, and we are their first major client. They've obviously had big, high-profile clients before, but nobody in terms of volume sales that they've had. There will be teething issues. There has been obvious issues. They are trying their best to rectify them. If they're not rectified for the coming year, for next season, then absolutely that's when I think people can do their dinger and they'll be justified at that. I know it's no help for people who have been affected by, one, the quality, two, delivery issues, et cetera, but they can only do so much at one time. And if there's been a bulk issue like this, then it will take a wee bit of time. And again, I know that doesn't help anybody who has been affected, but as long as they get it sorted out and it is rectified for next year.
I think for me, Derek, we spoke about this. I think the main thing is the whole quality thing. You know, I think that's what's been the biggest disappointment. There's obviously been major mistakes made there. And as you say, we just have to hope that they learn from the mistakes and rectify them. You know, there's no any more, and we just have to wait and see if that is the case. I'm the same opinion as yourself. You know, there has been a lot, you know, stuff disappointing. I personally have bought the training gear for my son and had no issues with delivery, no issues with the top. It's been washed several times now, and you know, the quality is there. It looks, you know, absolutely stunning. So personally, I've not had any problems, but I know there has been a lot of issues. So as long as they learn from their mistakes.
Yeah. After some of the issues with Castor, Club 1872 wrote to Castor looking for some answers, and they've stated that Castor haven't responded to them, nor were they one of the ones invited to the focus group event. So I don't know how to take that one, because ultimately Club 1872 are a major shareholder within Rangers, but they also are a fans group, so they speak for a certain amount of fans as well.
Yeah.
And something that's came out over the last week or so is that over the last couple of months, two directors of Club 1872 have resigned without explanation. And it seems to be that some of them, Club 1872, perhaps have maybe been left out in the cold after some of the boardroom changes. As I've always said, their role is a bit ambiguous with Rangers, because they were initially set up as a fans group, and then they obviously were getting shares in as well. And then they have got a certain amount of shares that they want representation on the board, which, you know, you could argue, yes, all justified, absolutely. However, they've got that conflict of interest for me. They either are a board member or they are a fans group. I don't know what they are just now, so we need to wait and see how that transpires. Yeah. And I think they'll be having elections at some point to obviously replace them, you would like to think. But next thing here, Steve Davis equals Northern Ireland's all-time cap record at 119 caps, which is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah,
so no doubt he'll go on to beat that as well with the up-and-coming games. Next thing here is Communications Executive Alice Headworth has been made redundant. She put the news on Twitter. She did a lot of the presenting on RTV. However, it appears what we were doing with our services now with RTV that she was maybe no longer required. So certainly good luck to her in her future endeavours.
Yes, definitely.
Yep. Next couple of things here is, you tweeted it out the other day, Brian Loudrup, after a 10-year battle with cancer, has been given the all clear, which is absolutely amazing news, isn't it?
It certainly is, and just goes to show that the man is God. Cancer doesn't affect God, Derek, and, you know, we're absolutely delighted with that. My absolute hero, and he looks absolutely fantastic as well. Let's be honest, he looks just a couple of years older than he did when he retired for football, so he's looking excellent, he's looking fit and healthy. And, you know, I will always refer to the man as God, and I am absolutely delighted for him. And hopefully we will see him back at Ibrox soon, you know, as soon as, you know, the crowds and everything are allowed back in to the stadium. So, no, really, really pleased for the guy, you know, tremendous news.
Yep. Next thing here, a couple of non-Rangers related things, is Celtic and Aberdeen have been fined £30,000 by the SPFL for COVID regulation breaches. However, £8,000 has to be paid to the SPFL Trust. The remaining £22,000 is suspended pending any further breaches. What an absolute fucking joke that is.
Does it surprise you at all, Derek? Really?
Nearly get the game shut down, yet all you fine them is basically £8,000.
And when you look at what St Mirren had to do, go out and bring in, you know, a sort of fourth string goalkeeper to play in their game, it shows you that it's the people who are running our game do not have a clue what they're doing. You know, there have been blatant breaches there that have put people in danger. And that's all that happens. It's quite incredible, Derek. So it doesn't surprise me in the slightest either, though, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah. And the last piece of news here I've got is Sturgeon has paused the phased return of fans coming back to football until the 5th October at the earliest. That's clearly now, after what's happening now, is going to be extended. We're not going to get fans, until at least next year. Test events did go ahead, though, strangely, for the Aberdeen versus Killy and Ross County versus Celtic. The fans were not allowed to sing, shout, celebrate, so really, what was the point of it? And the irony is, those are the two teams, or Aberdeen and Celtic, two of the teams that nearly got the game shut down in the first place.
Exactly. And that was the biggest laugh out of it all, Derek, let's be honest. The biggest farce there is of what happened, and then for those to be the two teams that it was allowed to be against is just incredible. It really is.
Yeah. So, nudist chases boars through park after they steal his laptop.
What?
There is no greater feeling than relaxing in the park on a fine summer's day with your bollocks exposed to the world. Perhaps if you're feeling really indulgent, you'll enjoy a little surf of the web while you're at it. But for one bloke in Germany, the most pure of pleasures was ruined by a family of thieving boars who emerged seemingly out of nowhere before nicking his laptop and charging off. Landed in this most frustrating of predicaments, the guy did what most of us would do and gave chase, as countless onlookers pissed themselves laughing. Pickpocketing took place on Wednesday at Tuflasee, I think that's how you pronounce it, a popular bathing spot to the west of Berlin. Now, in centuries gone by, if a boar stole your bodkin or whatever while you had your bits out, you'd at least be able to console yourself with the knowledge that only eyewitnesses would get the pleasure of laughing at you as you gave chase. But this day and age, the bodkin is a laptop, and eyewitnesses have cameras with social media accounts. So as such, it was inevitable that the most perfect of moments would become a viral hit.
Derek, I was when you were talking about a family of boars to start off with, I had the vision of like mother, father, and two children. Train spotters were the ones that had done it that you were talking, but it was the pig type of boar that happened. But there you go.
Yes, so on that note, we will end the podcast.
Yes.
So as ever, if you want to check our stuff out, you can go to our website, which is iReadyPodcast.wordpress.com, and I've partly got it updated and up to date with the games. I still need to fill in some of the descriptions and the other post-match reactions. However, I'll get to that at some point. So we've just got to look forward to the game on Thursday. It's going to be a tough one, but we'll see what happens, and I'll be back with a post-match reaction then.
Definitely, yeah. As I say, take it one game at a time, Derek. Worry about this game, and then we can go on to the game on Sunday as well. All these games are now turning into vital matches for us. So, just concentrate on each one as they come.
Yep. So, thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Take care, folks. Goodbye.
And the stadium erupts in red, white, and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.